Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
We've spoken a fair amount about this, what's his name? Bob Villain. Bob Villain, who of course takes his name from the Jewish Bob Dylan, one who performed in Israel numerous times, lived on a kibbutz, so there, never mind that. It does get a little bit confusing. I had never heard of him until this event. Probably many and most of you hadn't either. I suspect that he will continue to be known for this, but not for his music, but that is just my feeling around this subject. The question is, what is hate speech? What is freedom of expression? And how do we marry these two? Do we ever, or do we always have to live in the state of tension? Maybe we need to. Maybe it's a good thing. I'm not sure. Let's ask somebody who really does know what he's talking about, and that is Professor Anton Harber. He's the Executive Director of the Campaign for Free Expression. Good morning. Thanks for joining us once again. I hope you are well. This is probably...
I am very well, but I just need to clarify one point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no longer the Executive Director of the Campaign for Free Expression. I'm a director, but there is a new executive director.
Thank you. Okay, good. Noted and clarified. So this event over the weekend is probably a perfect example, I would imagine, of trying to find a way to balance free expression with hate speech. Give me your thoughts on it.
Correct. What he said was clearly ugly, unpleasant, disturbing. There's many adjectives one could use.
Right.
But I suspect that in a technical sense, it falls short of hate speech.
Tell me why.
Well, hate speech, I think there's a couple of requirements in a formal legal sense. The one is the threat of imminent violence. And I'm not sure you could show that what he did...
Mm.
It did or was likely to lead to imminent violence. And secondly, it needs to be directed at a protected group,
right?
Such as Jews or black people.
Interesting. Why would that be though? I mean, never mind the fact forget the IDF. Let's just say it's somebody else that isn't defined as a protected group. Surely it wouldn't matter. Or shouldn't?
Well, I'm talking about the technical definition, and it is different to talk about death to an army than it is to people defined by a characteristic like their ethnicity, color, or religion.
Right. Okay. So if he said,
let me ask you this.
Mm.
If somebody said death to Hamas, which actually many people do say,
right,
and feel,
right,
is that hate speech?
Yeah, I'm not actually debating that issue. I'm just asking what it means to be a protected group. Is for example, white male protected?
In South African law,
yes,
which is based on international law, there are certain characteristics to a protected group. It is race,
gender,
it is religion, it is sexual preference and gender.
Okay, so therefore it would be
characteristics like that.
Right, okay. I'm just trying to understand it. I'm not debating any issue around it. I just want to try and understand the technical definition, because when you say protected group, I wanted to understand what that meant.
Yeah.
So it is really race, religion, possibly nationality?
Okay,
got it. And we're going to assume, as for the sake of this discussion, that the definitions in the UK are similar to what it would be in South Africa. So what he says is therefore arguably not hate speech, even though the IDF has conscription, which means male, female, it means Israelis, it means all sorts of things, but that's where it becomes blurred. Is that right?
I think that's right. You know, Britain doesn't have a constitution.
Right.
As we do, that defines it in the way ours does.
Uh-huh.
So we are seeing the British police investigate it. I don't think as distasteful as it was,
yes,
as ugly as it was,
mm-hmm,
I don't think he or she can or should be prosecuted for saying what they said.
What about the context? What about the fact that he is inciting hatred amongst hundreds of thousands of people, arguably, well, it is definitely because it was broadcast as well, and it's people who have not chosen to go to a political rally. Therefore, he's almost imposing a hatred or some kind of an incitement to hate, even if it's not an incitement to violence, an incitement to hate on a group of people who have not chosen to be there for that.
Well, I think you have to take account of the fact that obviously he would very clearly be in serious trouble if he said death to Israelis or death to Jews.
Mm.
He chose to say death to an army.
Mm.
And I return to my parallel. I think there are many people and Israelis and people on your show who would say death to Hamas.
Absolutely. But one is a terror organization and one is a legitimate government's defense force. It is different. Even if people would say it, it doesn't mean...
You do have to see the context. And the context is the real issue here. So let's be frank about it.
Yes.
The context here is that you've got both sides in this conflict being accused of war crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so yes, it's a legitimate army, but you do have to bear in mind the reality that the Israeli Defense Force itself is investigating war crimes among its troops, and there is growing evidence that there may have been war crimes in the treatment of Palestinians, and you know, that doesn't justify Hamas's war crimes by any means,
nor does it justify if there are individual war crimes, and if there are, then they need to be held accountable and responsible and tried accordingly. It doesn't mean that if the South African Defence Force behaved poorly, or some of them in the Congo, it doesn't mean that everybody within that organisation needs to be need to call for their deaths. Hamas is a genocidal terror organization who, in its charter, calls for the death of Jews. It is different.
Yeah, yes. I'm not. It is. There are differences without any doubt.
Mm.
But I'm trying to explain the context.
No, I get. I do understand it.
The debate around Bob Vilan is in fact a distraction from the real issue here, which is that we need to have an honest look at war crimes on both sides.
Right, but he created that distraction, and to a large extent, he created that distraction, and then exactly what you're saying. People are saying, "Oh, how can you be upset about that when there's a real genocide?" Well, he put that out there. He created this discussion.
Yes.
To some extent, he's caused everybody to look away from what might be the real issue. We don't have a lot of time. I just want to ask you one more question, which is about the BBC broadcasting it. What is your thought on that?
My view is that if you're broadcasting something like that, you have to make sure you do it in a context that does not feed a threat of violence or imminent violence or harm. So I think there are questions about the way the BBC presented it or failed to give it a context. I'm in favor of free speech. Mm. I'm in favor, if something like that happens, it should not be hidden. It should be discussed and debated and confronted. So I don't think, you know, I think the BBC had to deal with it. I think there's issues over whether they dealt with it adequately.
Mm, mm. It's absolutely fascinating because it is one that, as I said in our intro, and I remain convinced about it. I think they're important conversations, and I think that there should never be. We probably shouldn't ever find a place that is perfectly comfortable, because then I think we're doing something wrong. There needs to be attention to a great extent around this. We do need to leave it there, Professor Anton Harbour. Thank you for joining us as you always do. It's 8:32. Give me your thoughts, your reaction. 0618 951019.